Warning: This episode includes topics of murder, extreme violence, ridiculing, and bodily dysfunctions that some people might be uncomfortable with. Listener discretion is advised, especially for young children. So you're saying I have to dig up this grave, open the coffin, take the foot off, close the coffin, rebury all the dirt I just dug out of it, and then keep the foot?
Yeah, because we need to test if the ghost is angry over the foot or if they're angry because you like broke into their grave and just left it there. We have to
But
give them
see,
like a
but this
proper
makes it.
burial.
Some of the most famous horror movies in cinematic history are actually based on true stories. I, Yeshu Upasani,
And me, Arvind Raghunathan, will shed light on the true stories that inspired these terrifying movies. And we'll be investigating the question on why humans are so interested in the paranormal, and whether their imaginations are able to conjure what's not even there.
there's a lot to find this season. After all, there's always more to uncover behind the story. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Story. I'm one of your hosts, Yeshu Upasani, a paranormal believer ready to show you how the paranormal is real.
And I'm your other host, Arvind Raghunathan, the skeptic ready to disprove everything Yeshvi says, because as we all know, ghosts aren't real. But before we continue this episode, let us hopefully be the first to wish you all a very happy holidays. And since it's been a while since our last episode, I'll turn it over to Yeshvi to catch everyone up to speed.
Today's episode is the third one in our new segment where we explain the true stories that inspired the most famous horror TV show of all time, American Horror Story. And if you have no idea what's going on because you clicked on the wrong podcast, you might as well stick around because this is the podcast where we explain the true stories that inspired famous horror movies, or for today's case, shows. Now, this segment is a part of our second season. And by the way, if you haven't listened to the first season, go check that out. And the goal for our second season was to figure out whether the paranormal was real and if humans had the ability to create the paranormal when it wasn't even there.
But today we're going to be answering a different question. Are humans evil? Even though this question has nothing to do with the paranormal, or does it? You'll find more as we continue, and based on the stories you hear today, you'll get why we changed the question.
But Arvin, what's this episode even about?
Today we are going to be uncovering American Horror Story's fourth season, Freak Show. The season has stars in it like Sarah Paulson, Evan Peters, Jessica Lange, and more. It covered everything that went behind a circus that starred people with physical dysfunctions. The season premiered on October 8th, 2014, and is a personal favorite of both Yeshvi and me.
We'd also like to remind you that this season we are donating all the funds we make from our episodes to the AAPI, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, to fight against anti-Asian hate crimes because no one deserves to live in fear just based on their race. Also, don't forget to leave us a message on our anchor.fm website with any comments, concerns, questions, just anything you would like us to know.
And don't forget to follow us at Behind the Story on Instagram and Twitter, with a dot between the I and N on Instagram and an underscore between the I and N on Twitter. And now, let's see if humans really suck.
One of the most interesting stories in Freak Show is that of Edward Mordrake, a man they dedicated a whole Halloween episode to, and in real life, he is a case that puzzled many scientists and historians. Edward Mordrake, also referred to as the man with two faces, is an urban legend that became huge with Americans in the early 1900s. As legend goes, on December 8th, 1895, the Boston Sunday Post published an article titled "The Wonders of Modern Science," where they documented people they considered human freaks. One of the people on this list was Edward Mordrake. Edward was a young, good-looking Englishman with exceptional musical talent. However, the poor man was cursed with another face at the back of his head, one that was said to be, quote, "as lovely as a dream, as hideous as a devil," end quote. The face at the back of his head was evil and mocked Edward during every moment of his existence. This evil face would whisper horrible things to Edward at night, and eventually Edward ordered the evil face to be destroyed after his death. Edward wrote, quote, "lest it continues its dreadful whispering in my grave," end quote. In 1896, American doctors George M. Gold and Walter L. Pyle published Edward's story in their book Anomalies and Curiosities of Medicine, which is a collection of strange medical cases. In the 2000s, an image surfaced on social media depicting a skull with a face on both sides of it. This skull is said to be Edward Mordrake's. However, and I know this is going to shock you guys, Edward's case was not real. And I mean, it's shocking because normally it's Arvin's job to take the fun out of everything, but don't worry, I have more coming, and he's here to explain exactly what's going on in Edward's story.
Okay, as Yeshvi said, it's my turn to show you all the truth. Edward Mordrake is fake. Okay, so an article on Ripley's.com puts it perfectly, so I will quote directly from them. So, what's to doubt about Mordrake? First, the idea that the second face could speak raises suspicion. How could it have its own consciousness if it didn't have its own brain? But more importantly, we can look into the origin of the Mordrake tale. Anomalies and Curiosities of Medicine only cites, quote, lay sources, end quote, which science historian Alex Boas of hoax.org found. By searching historical newspapers, Boas discovered a verbatim account published in a newspaper just a year before the medical textbook was released. Mordrake was one of several wonders of modern science, along with a spider with a human head, a fish woman, and a half-human, half-crab being. The original author's source for these beings is, quote, the Royal Scientific Society, end quote, which does not and did not exist. Clearly, Mordrake was simply a character among others in a work of science fiction that spread far and wide. As for the photos of Mordrake and his mummified head, the first is actually a wax sculpture and the second is made out of paper mache. Next, a USA Today article takes a further look into the historical aspect of this fictional tale. Mordrake's story gained credibility and notoriety because it was included in Anomalies and Curiosities of Medicine. As Yashri said, it's a medical case study published in 1896 by doctors George M. Gold and Walter L. Pyle. However, the book copied his story from a fictional newspaper article. Alex Boas, a historian and curator of the popular myth-busting website Museum of Hoaxes, found that Gold and Pyle had copied Mordrake's story from a newspaper article that first ran in the Boston Sunday Post in 1895. Born a noble English family, the article says Mordrake was intelligent, musically gifted, and handsome, but he suffered from a rare medical condition. He was born with a second face on the back of his head. Terrified of revealing the face to others and unable to find a doctor who would excise it, Mordrake committed suicide at the age of 23. The article's purported source reports in the Royal Scientific Society, but that citation doesn't hold up to scrutiny. The only Royal Scientific Society that USA Today found online was founded in 1970 by Jordanian monarchs. No reports of the similarly named Royal Society of London matched the claims in the article. There are no records to prove Mordrake's doctors, supposedly the source of the details about his case, ever existed. Other elements of this article also raise some flags. Charles Lowton Hildreth, the author of the article, was a speculative fiction writer and poet. The other subjects of the article, like the fishwoman of Lincoln and a man with four eyes, are made-up hybrids of humans and animals. And the article was published in the 1890s, the height of the yellow journalism era in the United States. Golden Pyle's inclusion of Mordrake's stories in Anomalies and Curiosities of Medicine doesn't add to the story's credibility. The authors didn't say they identified any new sources or examined Mordrake themselves. Instead, they included the same text as the newspaper article and claimed an unnamed lay source had passed on the story. To top all of this off, an article from allthat'sinteresting.com gives further evidence on the science fiction author of this story, so I'll quote directly from it. Secondly, Hildreth's article appears to be the first time any of the medical cases he described have ever appeared in any literature, scientific or otherwise. The Royal Society of London's entire database is searchable online, and Boas wasn't able to find any of Hildreth's anomalies in its archives. From the Norfolk spider to the fishwoman of Lincoln, none of them appeared. Quote, when we realize this, Boas wrote, that's when it becomes apparent that Hildreth's article was fiction, end quote. All of it sprang from his imagination, including Edward Mordrake. As one might imagine, many newspapers in the late 19th century weren't held to the same editorial standards as they were today. While they were still vital sources of information and entertainment, they were also filled with fictional tales or presented as if they were nonfiction. Ultimately, Hildreth's story about a man with two faces wasn't necessarily irresponsible journalism. It was simply a tale written convincingly enough to trick a couple of doctors and to endure in the public imagination for more than a century. Hildreth died mere months after his article was published, so we never got to see just how quickly Americans were fooled by his wild creativity. Now, moving away from these articles, one topic that many bring up as a reasoning behind Mordrake's existence is the condition craniofacial duplication. This is a rare form of conjoined twinning specific to the skull and head. This could be what Mordrake had that the Hildreth saw and took out of proportions in his newspaper article. This condition ranges from simply having your features very spaced out to having a full duplicated face. Sadly, most infants with craniofacial duplication die due to a lack of proper brain structure and neural tubes. However, the theory that Hildreth's story was just a work of fiction makes a lot more sense than Mordrake having craniofacial duplication.
So I think one of the main takeaways, not only from Edward Mordrake's story, but maybe from like all the things we're going to hear in this episode, is how naive Americans are, or honestly, I think how much they want a story. And okay, Arvid and I can say this, we are both Americans, we are both American citizens, we are making fun of our own kind. But I think so much is just like they want like the story of a lifetime. And I think sometimes Americans are still fighting like England in a way. Like they still want to have a screw you moment, and we're doing so much better than you are by taking like an English, like let's say Edward Mordrake was like a real person. Like there was a guy in England in the 18th century, 19th century, and his name was Edward Mordrake, and he was like a really good piano player. Like let's say that's what he was. And then like Americans catch wind of this and they're like, oh my God, what if he had another face at the back of his head? And then like, and I mean, when it comes out of the mouth of a doctor, I think people are like, oh my God, what is this? I don't know. I think we still see a lot today in American, this isn't, okay, I swear this episode is not going to become just, like, commentary on today's society, but I think we still see a lot today the drive for a story, because as Arvind would always love to note, money is the biggest driving factor in life, right? Because how much do you think these doctors got out of their book? I'm assuming quite a lot.
No, seriously, like a lot. Like money and fame are such big influences. Like whoever posted the papier-mâché skull on social media, I'm sure they got a lot of like views and everything from
that. That was crazy too. Because when that came out, everybody was like okay, because everybody knows Edward Mordrake was an urban legend, right? But the reason we love urban legends is because there is always a little bit of like an element of truth to it, right? Like I think a lot of the big ones. With some of the most famous urban legends are the ones that involve like the Japanese tube system, and it's like there's always some level of truth, like maybe something like this kind of happened and then they twisted it to make the story. And so, you know, Mordrake was an urban legend, and then the moment this like papier-mâché skull thing comes out and they advertise it as like real bones and that kind of stuff, everybody was like, whoa guys, what if he was real? And I think then it goes back right to the naivety, if that is the word, of Americans taking that and believing it wasn't. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if like some person came out and they were like, it's paper mache, and like nobody listened to them. They were like, nope, that is a real skull. we're gonna keep going with it. So I guess that's our first jab in a way at the human species. Our human, this is not the story that's going to tell us if humans are evil. I think it's the story that's going to tell us that humans are gullible, right?
Yeah, humans are, I think that's honestly a better topic to talk about than are humans evil?
Are humans evil? No, we live off a controversy, guys. this is not your average podcast. We don't shy away from topics.
That's very fair. But I mean, there's so many examples of humans being gullible. Like, I mean, just True. Take some of the other examples from the American Horror Story season.
Right. And then, I mean, there, the fact that we can make a whole segment out of things that have been inspired off of it, and then how also American Horror Story has completely twisted everything about it, which we will see, actually. This is actually a really good segue that I'm very happy that we created, to our next, I hate calling them stories because they actually happened, our next real life event, and it is very different than what we saw in American Horror Story, but let's talk about it. So I think one of the main takeaways, not only from Edward Mordrake's story, but maybe from like all the things we're going to hear in this episode, is how naive Americans are, or honestly, I think how much they want a story. And okay, Arvid and I can say this, we are both Americans, we are both American citizens, we are making fun of our own kind. But I think so much is just like they want like the story of a lifetime. And I think sometimes Americans are still fighting like England in a way, like they still want to have a screw you moment, and we're doing so much better than you are by taking like an English, like let's say Edward Mordrake was like like a real person. Like there was a guy in England in the 19th century, and his name was Edward Mordrake, and he was like a really good piano player. Like, let's say that's what he was. And then like Americans catch wind of this and they're like, oh my God, what if he had another face at the back of his head? And then like, and I mean, when it comes out of the mouth of a doctor, I think people are like, oh my God, what is this? I don't know. I think we still see a lot today in American, this isn't, okay, I swear this episode is not going to become just like commentary on today's society, but I think we still see a lot today that drive for a story, because as Arvind would always love to note, money is the biggest driving factor in life, right? Because how much do you think these doctors got out of their book? I'm assuming quite a lot.
No, seriously, like a lot. Like money and fame are such big influences. Like whoever posted the papier-mâché skull on social media, I'm sure they got a lot of like views and everything from
that. That was crazy too. Because when that came out, everybody was like okay, because everybody knows Edward Mordrake was an urban legend, right? But the reason we love urban legends is because there is always a little bit of like an element of truth to it, right? Like I think a lot of the big ones. With some of the most famous urban legends are the ones that involve like the Japanese tube system. And it's like, there's always some level of truth. Like maybe something like this kind of happened and then they twisted it to make the story. And so, you know, Mordrake was an urban legend. And then the moment this like papier-mâché skull thing comes out and they advertise it as like real bones and that kind of stuff, everybody was like, whoa, guys, what if he was real? And I think then it goes back right to the naivety, if that is the word, of Americans taking that and believing it wasn't. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if like some person came out and they were like, it's paper mache, and like nobody listened to them. They were like, nope, that is a real skull. we're gonna keep going with it. So I guess that's our first jab in a way at the human species. This is not the story that's going to tell us if humans are evil. I think it's the story that's going to tell us that humans are gullible, right?
Yeah, humans are, I think that's honestly a better topic to talk about than are humans evil?
Are humans evil? No, we live off a controversy, guys. this is not your average podcast. We don't shy away from topics.
That's very fair. But I mean, there's so many examples of humans being gullible. Like, I mean, just true. Take some of the other examples from the American Horror Story season.
Right. And then, I mean, the fact that we can make a whole segment out of things that have been inspired off of it, and then how also American Horror Story has completely twisted everything about it, which we will see, actually. This is actually a really good segue that I'm very happy that we created, to our next, I hate calling them stories because they actually happened, our next real life event, and it is very different than what we saw in American Horror Story, but let's talk about it. So without further ado, let's just get on with it. So viewers of American Horror Story seem to fall into the trap of constantly loving the characters that Evan Peters plays. I get it, guys. I'm with you. And his character in Freak Show is no different. Jimmy Darling, the charming lobster-handed man, was actually based on a real person who was convicted of third-degree murder. Ladies, gentlemen, non-binaries, and gender fluids, let's talk about the Stiles family. There is a physical condition known as ectrodactyly that causes hands to look like lobster claws, meaning that certain fingers are missing or fused together. This particular condition had affected the Stiles family for generations, but instead of being held back by it, they embraced it. As the family grew, they started a circus called the Lobster Family, which became a carnival fan favorite all throughout the 20th century, and it would have remained all fun and games if one son, Grady Stiles Jr., didn't fall off the deep end. Grady Stiles Jr. would be the original person known as Lobster Boy, and he was born in Pittsburgh in 1937. He had a pretty bad case as both his hands and feet suffered in the condition that ran through his family. Because of that, he was unable to walk. Besides using a wheelchair, Grady was able to use incredible upper body strength and pull himself across the floor, which later led to him becoming unbearably strong. When you think about stereotypical freak show acts, you might imagine people ridiculing those who are performing, but that wasn't the case for the Lobster family. They made anywhere between $50,000 to $80,000 a year and got a couple weird stares, but nothing crazy. Because of their successful business, they never stopped, which led Grady to grow up in the carnival world. One day, he met a young woman named Maria Teresa, who had run away to join the circus as a teenager. She was just a staff member, but the two fell in love and had two children. One of the children had ectrodactyly and was sent to join the family act. Grady began to really take a dark turn when his daughter, Kathy, the one who did not have the condition, became the center of her father's attention. Grady was a raging alcoholic, and his insane upper body strength only worsened the things he did to his wife and children. He would use his claw-like hand to beat them and also choke his wife. However, we can see things really turn for the worst when Donna, his other daughter, fell in love. Supposedly, Grady invited the young man over to his house in order to give him his blessing for the wedding that was planned for the next day. But when the man went to Grady's house, Grady picked up his shotgun and murdered him. Grady admitted everything that he did, but was able to get out of jail time by claiming that the jail could not handle his disability, which now also included cirrhosis and emphysema from years of drinking and smoking, and that if he were sent to jail, it would be a cruel and unusual punishment. The court let him off with 15 years of probation. Grady then divorced his wife, remarried another woman, had two more children which he abused along with his second wife, got a divorce from his second wife, and then in 1989 remarried Maria, who as a reminder was his first wife. Grady, now believing that the justice system will never catch up to him, began abusing his family harder. However, Maria reached her wit's end. Maria paid her 17-year-old neighbor, Chris Wyant, $1,500 to kill Grady. Maria had a son from another marriage who helped her come up and execute the idea. Wyant took a .32 Colt automatic and shot Grady dead in his trailer. During the trial, they all confessed that they had intended to kill him, but Maria said, quote, "My husband was going to kill my family. I believe that from the bottom of my heart," end quote. Another one of her children testified against him as well. The jury convicted Wyant of a second-degree murder charge with 27 years in prison. Maria and her son, who helped organize the event, were sentenced to first-degree murder. Maria had a sentence of 12 years. Now, before we continue with this episode, here's a quick message from our sponsors.
This was why, when planning this episode and coming up for the stuff with it, I went more, instead of the original thing we talked about, are humans really that gullible, to are humans evil? And we will see in the escalation of the tales we're about to talk about in this episode. I would say, like, this is a good example of do humans suck? Because they do. As we've seen with Grady. But evil, I don't know for this one. What do you think?
I also agree that you couldn't necessarily get to you. You know, it's like we're building a working thesis for an essay.
Yeah.
We're starting with gullible. Grady, yeah. I wouldn't call him evil, but he's a really bad dude.
Yeah, he sucks.
He really does suck. So now we're at, like, humans suck, but they're not, like, evil. Like, you would call a demon evil. You'd call, like, a serial killer evil.
Yeah. Here's what we should picture. Audience, here's what I want you to picture. Picture one of those, like, meter things, okay? The green zone is good person, not evil. Yellow zone is, wow, you've done some questionable things, but not evil. Orange zone is, wow, you suck, but, like, I don't think you are evil. And then red is, like, you are horrible, you are evil. I would say we're orange with Grady.
Yeah, with Grady we're orange. With the author of Edward Mordrake, we're in green. Because he didn't have any ill intentions.
Because it was nice intentions.
Yeah.
Just very incorrect. Yeah. Renee's orange. What I also wanted to talk about was the jury of the conviction of Wyant and Maria and her son, because Grady got off. Like, he went to court and he was like, oh yeah, I killed my daughter's fiance, but you can't keep me because look at all of my disabilities. And the jury was like, well, you got me there.
Which is another example of gullible people.
Right. Another example of gullible. Also another example of, like, why did you pick this jury? Like, yeah. You guys should have probably done a better job. And then we see the jury convict Wyant of 27 years and then Maria of 12 years. Why did Maria even get it? After she literally was like, dude, he would have killed us if we didn't do it. And then like the kid that testified with her was like, yeah, this was for real. And then, like, the jury looked at her and they were like, eh, 12 years.
I mean, yeah, it should have been counted under self-defense at the very, worst. Right. It should have been, conspiring to plan someone's murder, yeah. But there's no way that constitutes 12 years.
I would put the jury who did Wyatt and Maria's sentence in the yellow category. You've done some questionable things, but you're not, a bad person.
Yeah. Just a stupid person.
Just you're just dumb. this is probably our most controversial episode. But if you guys like it, let us know.
Tell us. We can do more.
If you guys really want us to get more and more controversial, we'll do it. We are happy to
slander people if you want us.
Yes,
to.
We are happy to do it. So we've talked about urban legends. We have talked about the horrifying case of a raging alcoholic who had a family. And now we are moving on to somebody known as Schlitzy. So aside from Jimmy Darling, fans of AHS also fell in love with Pepper, a character who deserves so, so, so much more than they ended up getting. Now, Pepper is based off of Schlitzy, whose origins we're not entirely sure of, and the general consensus is that Schlitzy was born as Simon Metz on September 10th, 1901, in the Bronx, New York. Schlitzy was born with microcephalus, a condition that contains a person's cranium to be abnormally small and, kind of pointed. In the 1800s, it was very common for people living with this condition to be seen as people who were, an entirely different species, and they were sometimes marketed as aliens. Schlitzy got into the world of entertaining against his will, as his condition caused him to have slow processing times, and he was often unable to form cognitive sentences. Schlitzy was branded as a female for most of his life due to the clothing that circuses and carnival leaders would make him wear. But he had a pretty good life due to the fact that his colleagues genuinely cared and took care of him. Unlike what I told you in the last tale, Pepper is quite similar to Schlitzy in the way that they were both very innocent, loved by those around them, and had unconditional love that they shared with others. Schlitzy was a part of many carnivals and even a couple films. He never totally retired, as he continued to perform for others and was continued to be cared for by other performers until his death in 1971 at the age of 71. So, Schlitzy's story I wanted to talk about because for American Horror Story fans, we all, Pepper's story is very sad. And when I found out that Pepper was based on somebody, it was a true story, I was like, oh no, this couldn't have gone well. And I'm happy to say it did go well. That being said, in, the early 1900s carnival scene, people like Schlitzy were very ridiculed, and it wasn't like what we saw with the Lobster family, where they embraced it and then they got a couple weird stares, but anything like that, they were ridiculed and things like that. But I love the dynamic that Schlitzy was able to have with his other colleagues and how they took care of. I would say we're in the green meter, man.
Oh yeah, Schlitzy is for sure in the green. He did nothing.
Schlitzy is for sure in the green, but I would say the people, colleagues in the green, but people who ridiculed him, orange. You suck. This man, Schlitzy, was so nice, and you were going to make fun of him? No way. Uh-uh. Orange.
I'd also put the circus leaders and people who made him wear female clothing in the orange as well, because,
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Orange. 100% orange. No. Get out of here. Something I also wanted to make sure we talked about, because I would love to know your opinion on this, Arvid. So, Freak Show, right? The season was very almost appalling because I don't know, you people categorize as quote unquote freaks, which is it's so disgusting to say that. And then the way that people watched him, I don't know. Every time I think about it, I always imagine it as something that's like that only happens in movies. Like this is a real thing.
Right.
Isn't that bonkers?
It is absolutely crazy to think of nowadays, just the way the world works and the way we think now, to think that sit there and make fun of someone's disabilities or what makes them different. Just
right, could you imagine paying tickets to go sit there and basically just ridicule somebody?
Right.
That's insane. That's when I look at the human race, I'm like, oh my god, what have we done? Too far. We got to go back to Mesopotamia times, guys. We got to restart this all.
So now I think our working thesis has gone slightly more toward humans are evil. Not there yet, but a little more.
Working thesis. So what we're going to do at the end of this episode is, Arvin and I are going to sit down, we're going to write a 5-paragraph essay, and we'll try to get it published somewhere.
Somewhere.
Or we'll post it, guys. Make sure you go see it. Okay. We're about to take a very drastic turn, though, in stories, because we went from, like, the very scary tale of Grady to, like, the uplifting tale of Schlitzie. We're about to get, like, very, very dark, so just get ready for that. It's gonna get sad, and we'll get into it now. Why delay the inevitable? So, the true story behind Betty and Dot is, like I just said, the saddest on this list, so just, you know, be warned. Betty and Dot were two sisters that were conjoined, and they were kind of the focus of the freak show season, as they were played by Sarah Paulson. And they were based on Daisy and Violet Hilton. So the conjoined twins, Daisy and Violet, were born in Brighton, England on February 5th, 1908. They were joined right above their rears at their backside, and they shared no internal organs, as the only thing that united them was bone and muscle. Their mother could not afford to keep them, so she sold them to her boss and midwife, Mary Hilton. The Hilton sisters would later publish an autobiography in 1942 where they address all of the terrible things they underwent while living with Mary. Mary tortured the girls both physically and mentally and groomed them to dance and sing in dehumanizing ways. When the girls would go on tours, they were seen as Mary's property. The girls were a big success. While on tour, they would be seen as dolls, and Violet would play the piano while Daisy played the violin. They toured around Germany, Australia, and America, and they saw hundreds of people in the crowds for where they performed. However, every penny they earned, which was quite a lot, went to Mary Hilton. Mary died in Birmingham, Alabama, and Violet and Daisy fell in the hands of Mary's daughter, Edith, and her husband, Meyer Myers. The couple treated the girls worse than Mary did. One of the most notable things they did was prevent the twins from aging by keeping them looking young through makeup. However, this stopped after circus critics noticed that the girls didn't age. Edith, using the money the girls earned, bought a mansion in San Antonio and had the girls tour the United States on vaudeville circuits, which is where they met Bob Hope and their best friend, and very notable figure these days, Harry Houdini. The twins were friends with their advance agent, William Oliver, and William's wife, Mildred, was suspicious of the relationship between William and the girls. After finding a postcard addressed to him where the girl signed the message with, quote, with love, end quote, she divorced him and sued the twins for $250,000. The lawyer, Martin J. Arnold, was able to get the girls alone without Edith or Myers in the room, and that's when Violet and Daisy told him about all the horrible things the Hilton family did to them. In April 1931, a judge ruled that the girls be granted their freedom and gave them over $100,000. The girls later went on to continue their lives in show business and even hosted their own show called The Hilton Sisters Review. But things took a turn for the worse as the girls took their new freedom to the extreme. They had numerous legal problems, many affairs, and clashed often with the media. The sisters appeared in the 1950 film Chained for Life, which flopped in the box office, and they even tried to get into the food franchise in the 1960s. At the end of the decade, they were broke. Their manager abandoned them in 1962 after a failed show in North Carolina that became their last show. For the remaining years, they worked as cashiers at a grocery store. On January 6, 1969, Violet and Daisy were found dead in their home. In 1997, a Broadway musical titled Sideshow was created to honor the girls' lives, and the musical received 4 Tony nominations. Okay, here's my consensus. The Hilton family, I'm going red, man. I'm saying they were evil.
Honestly, yeah. What they did was just beyond
reasoning. Which is so horrible. How sucky of a human being can you be? Like, you are red. You are red and you are horrible.
Honestly, if we can go past red, I'd put them there.
Past the scale, they are in the black. They suck. Honestly, like, something that always, something just, like, irks me so much, like, they didn't keep their money and they earned, like, so much. Like, one of the biggest things is that I want to harp on is how big the circus scene was in the 1900s, right? Mm. Like this was, like, the only form of entertainment. Movies weren't that big yet. Like, Broadway wasn't a thing. Like, this is it. And they got so much, and they didn't get to keep any of it. And right. It's just, like, it sucks. Like, God, they deserve so much better.
Right.
And then it's sad to see them, like, they've never had freedom before. And then when they first have it, being, like, as you would expect any person who gets something new to do, they, like, overuse it. They overexert it. And that's why, like, eventually they ended up with nothing, which is like, which is so sad. This is like, people, what's our thesis statement? People are evil because
people are evil because they are too motivated by fame and greed.
Ooh, that is good. That's a good thesis statement. People are evil because they are too motivated by greed and money and just fame and like, you just stop. What is good though? A couple of people that are good in the story though. Their lawyer, Martin J. Arnold, he's a pretty good guy because he helped them out. The jury that awarded the girls freedom and $100,000.
We like fair juries.
We like fair juries. Immediately when like the whole freedom thing happened, all I could think about is like, now that Britney Spears has like her own rights and her father isn't her conservative anymore. Cause like, yes, we love free Britney. Look at this most controversial episode, guys.
Freedom is great, y'all.
Freedom is great, guys. If you don't have your freedom, tell us and we will try to help you.
We will do best our
that
best.
We can. We will do our best. Everybody deserves freedom. Yes. So this was like that. This was my big, like, this is why we changed the question. Like, this was a story where I was like, screw the paranormal. Even though ghosts are real,
they are
this
not.
Is it. getting into something that I will actually tie into the paranormal after I finish telling you about it. We're going to talk about something that is not about if people are evil or not. Though actually, knowing us, it might still come up. But like I said before, the idea of like viewing people who have conditions and mocking them seems like something that is only in shows and movies. And that's why I think Freak Show was so jarring to fans of AHS and also just people in general. And of course, we can't forget about the Morbidity Museum, a place in the show where we saw what they did to preserve people with such conditions, and it was horrifying. But the Morbidity Museum is real, and it's called the Mutter Museum, and it's located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Of course, it's not to the extremity, and it is quite fascinating at times, but here are some of the weirder things that you can find in the museum. There are several anthropodermic books in the museum. What is anthropodermic books and what are they, you ask? They are books that are bound together by, drumroll please, human skin. Let that just like sink in.
Do we need to let that sink in?
I mean, no, but also yes. Like, very weird. So yes, human skin. The next thing is they have one of the largest collections in the museum is something they call wet specimens, are parts of the human body that are preserved in jars of formaldehyde. So those are like the weird heads in what almost looks like resin that you see in movies. However, one of the most disturbing specimens they have is a baby that was born without a skull.
Who gave them the rights to have this baby in the jar?
That's a pretty good question, actually. I don't know what their whole thing is. I feel a horrible example, I guess, would be like if you just found a human spine and you were like, where do I put this? You like take it to them, I guess. You know.
Yeah, I just coincidentally found a human spine.
Just like digging in my backyard, found a human spine. Okay, for this one, if you're a history buff, you might like this. I know Arvind is, but John Wilkes Booth, aka the guy who murdered Abraham Lincoln, has his vertebra in the museum. For context, just so you guys know, the vertebra is a part of the spine. So imagine you're like just walking around this museum and you're like, oh wow, kind of gross, kind of cool. And you get to see the spine of like one of the most famous assassins of all time. One of the most famous assassins of all time for having assassinated only one guy.
True. No, but I can actually imagine how they got the spine for this one. So some soldier just comes back after they killed Wilkes Booth. He's from this hometown. This is his hometown. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to cut out his spine and donate it to the museum.
He's like, yeah, I know the head would be cool and all, but like, have you guys heard about the spine? That's where it's at.
But one thing that you cannot use to identify him.
Right. Oh, maybe he wanted it to be like a mystery. He like gave them the spine and he was like, I'll pay you $50,000 if you can guess whose it is. And it was like the longest mystery ever. And then they were like, oh my god, when we found John Wilkes Booth's body, he didn't have a spine.
Dang.
So, on to the next thing. The museum has something, or I guess, like, someone, that they consider the Soap Lady. The Soap Lady gets her name from her waxy, almost soap-like remains. Scientists say the coating comes from a broken-down fat cut adipocere, and we believe that the woman died sometime in the 1800s. Now, I'm not joking to you guys. When I first heard that they had something called the Soap Lady, I was like, oh my god, what did they do to her? I was like, did they fill her with soap, or did they, like, coat her in soap? I was like, what? This is such a misleading name. But the whole thing about the adipocere is, like, it's a real, like, medical, I don't know, it's not a miracle, but it's a medical puzzle, that's what it is. Because scientists really are looking into it, because, like, this technically shouldn't happen to you, but it happened to her, and you can go see her if you wanted to. Okay, this one, when I found out, I was like, what is happening? And it's very gross and odd, but there's one more thing I'd like to talk about, and it's this thing. So, do you ever just, like, are you ever just walking around, or, like, maybe you're just in your house, or you just watch a scary movie or something, and you just, like, feel like something's watching you? In the Mutter Museum, something is, kind of. On the lower level of the museum, you can find 40 eyeballs on the wall known as the eye wall. They are wax replicas of eyes that show various things the eye can go through. For example, pink eye, eye cancer, sites, and more. I have one word for this museum, and it's gross.
Such a creative name. You have a bunch of eyes on a wall. What do you call it?
The eye wall. What do you call it? The eye wall. They could call it, like, through the looking wall.
No, that's a solid name. I was just thinking something like, we're always watching.
Oh, we're always watching? That could be fun. Yeah, the eye wall is deeply, when did they say the eye wall, like, if I'm talking to somebody, I'm like, oh, I just went to the eye wall, I would think they're talking about, like, Apple, like, the eye as in letter, and then wall is next to it without a space, so it'd be like a wall that shows, like, the history of Apple products. Wouldn't that be so cool? Did I just come up with a great idea?
Don't give them any ideas. They're going to sell that online for like $1,000.
I know. No. I patented it, guys. I patented my idea. No, the eye wall, I was like, what is this? It's like something's watching you to a whole new level. And it's creepy. And we could technically road trip to Philadelphia, but I don't want to go here.
No, I really don't either. I don't want to see human parts everywhere.
Yeah, I think we're at a good point. The quick, or maybe not quick, we'll see what happens, paranormal thing I'd like to bring up, though, Arvind, is, do you think that the souls/spirits of the people that they have are unrested because of this, right? Like, I'm just saying, is John Wilkes Booth mad that his vertebra is in this museum, and because of that, is he haunting it? Because I'm just saying, if I died and you took my bones and put them in, like, formaldehyde and stuck it in a museum, I would haunt that museum. I would be mad.
I don't think there are ghosts haunting this museum, but let's pretend that there are such a thing as ghosts, okay, that haunt these places, right? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Why would John? There have been many conflicting reports of, like, John Wilkes' ghosts at different places. Why?
That's
is he
true.
Here?
John Wilkes was a poor example. Let's just say, no, like, I'm just saying in general, right? Like, the baby that was born without a skull, or, like, just like when they have all of these, like, wet specimens, as they call them, right? Like, these body parts, like, the people of these. Like, are they mad that they don't have it? Because, like, they could just be haunting the place, because that could be, like, their, as legend will say, ghosts have unfinished business, right? That could be their unfinished business. That, like, you took my foot, and I will get it back.
Okay, two scenarios here. Uh-huh. One, if we're talking about bones, I don't think ghosts will care, because they don't have bones. But if we're talking about, like, let's say your eye or something, I feel like, when you become a ghost, if you don't get your, like, your missing parts and things back, then that's a ripoff.
Like, yeah, then you need to talk to the manager, okay?
Yes. Well, you need to find someone who can give you an eye.
There's, like, wars even in the spirit realm, and it's, like, over getting an eye. No, I think, okay, but for the bone thing, It's not that you don't have bones anymore. You deserve the bone that was in your body. If someone took my foot, I deserve my foot back.
But you're a ghost. Your foot doesn't matter anymore.
But, like, ghosts are, like, the point is, right, they have unfinished business, which means they haven't gotten over the fact that somebody took their foot. So they're, like, they're vengeful for it. Or it's like, okay, here's, I'm going to create a whole backstory for one of the feet in this museum. Oh, no. Let's say this person was, like, in the Civil War or something, and somebody cut off their foot, and they took it with them. And then, like, they later on, historians find it, and they put it in this museum, right? Like, this person has unrest, because while they were living, they lost their foot, and then they had to continue to live their life without a foot, and now it's just being displayed in some museum?
Okay, you know what, Yashvi? We should test this. Go to a cemetery, cut off someone's foot, we'll see if you get haunted.
You want me to dig up a grave? And you want me to basically, like what is it, 1/8 grave rob? Like, it'll be on ABC News.
The foot is not 1/8 of the body, but yes.
Yeah, okay, poor numbers. I got that as I said it. It would be on, like, ABC News. They'd be like, shocking discovery. Grave robbing is back? Question mark? Except they only took the foot? Question mark?
No one will realize, though. Who's gonna like, look at this grave and be like, I think there's a foot missing in there.
So you're saying I have to dig up this grave, open the coffin, take the foot off, close the coffin, rebury all the dirt I just dug out of it, and then keep the foot?
Yeah, because we need to test if the ghost is angry over the foot or if they're angry because you, like, broke into their grave and just left it there. So you have to give them, like, a proper burial.
This makes it a bad example now, because what if they're angry because I broke into their grave? They're like,
as long as you give them, like, a proper burial, then they should be fine. Trust me.
I'll just leave a little note that's like, if you're going to haunt me, make it because of the foot and not because I robbed your grave.
Yes, that can be my contribution. I will leave a note.
You'll leave the note. Why don't you keep it, Mr. I don't believe in ghosts?
No, because you're the one who, because then I'm going to, connecting with our theme of the rest of this season, I don't believe in the paranormal. I'm not going to see paranormal signs.
Like,
you take
the foot and you walk in and there's, like, a literal, like, apparition in front of you and you're like, eh.
I'm fine hallucinating.
Yeah. What was in that burger I ate?
I mean, I don't get enough sleep. That could honestly happen.
Oh my god. Just, you know, for legal sake, we are both going on the record saying we are not, have not, and will never rob any graves and steal the foot of any skeletons.
Yeah, I agree with that statement.
It was just a fun thought experiment.
Yep.
We hope you enjoyed this very interesting episode, and we would love to hear your thoughts about it. There are two ways you can talk to us. One, leave us a message on our anchor.fm website, or two, answer our poll question, and let me just tell you what it's going to be. Are humans evil?
To answer the poll question, make sure you're listening on Spotify, and you'll see it at the bottom of the page. Our next AHS episode is going to come out on February 11th, so make sure to check it out then.
And of course, follow us at Behind the Story with a period between the I and N on Instagram, and on Twitter with an underscore between the I and N. On our social medias, in the bio of them, you can find a form that will allow you to submit your very own paranormal story to us.
We hope you have the happiest of holidays, and remember,
there's always more to uncover behind the story.
See you next time.